You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUX webradio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. This is the Wednesday edition. I hope you all had a happy 4th of July. I certainly did. I caught up in my cleaning of my house. I really needed to do some organizing and did. Spent some money. And as I was driving home from the two or three stores I visited, and normally on the 4th of July, I don't do shopping, but this time I did, hoping for some sales. There really weren't any, and that's a lesson learned. But I was driving home, and we have a major road is Greenville Avenue, and suddenly everywhere I looked, I saw cars parked in parking lots and a big field, soccer field. What was going on? Well, I thought about it. I said, I know what's going on. They're here to watch the display, firecrackers, fireworks display, rockets going off. And sure enough, that's what it was. But then I heard on the news, rockets. It looks like North Korea launched this time, again, according to U.S. sources, primarily Department of Defense, military sources, they launched an ICBM, an intercontinental ballistic missile. At least this one could maybe hit Alaska, not Hawaii yet, and not the continental United States. I believe, and according to some military sources, that they already have upwards of a dozen nuclear weapons, but the hard, difficult part, and it's two really technical problems. One is a delivery system. You need a range. And what they're going for is clearly to hit the United States. But you also need to miniaturize the nuclear weapons. You can have a nuclear weapon, but it simply weighs too much, is too big, and can't fit on a rocket. Maybe you could drop it from a bomber, but they don't have that capability. And if they even had bombers that could reach the United States, it would be shot down before it hopefully reached the continental United States as well as Alaska. I still think North Korea is several years before it has both the missile capability and the size, the miniaturization, downsizing of the nuclear weapon so it could fit on a missile. Now, what's the danger here? It's nuclear proliferation. It's already happening. I've said the Islamic Republic of Iran, which is working closely with North Korea, has nuclear weapons, but they haven't tested it. They're relying on the North Koreans to do that. And they also have a missile program. And you got to keep in mind that linkage. But you also have to keep in mind who are the major allies of North Korea. It's by far Communist China, at one time Russia. And if you look at a map, it's clear who's right on the border of North Korea. It is China. I call it Communist China because it's still run by the Communist Party. And Russia, there's sort of like a small finger that's right on the border. Now, why is that important? Who has nuclear weapons that can right now hit the United States? It's Russia and China, and they have a large nuclear force. Do the American people want a nuclear war? I don't think so. Do the Chinese? I don't think so. Russia? Again, I don't think so. But in terms of the people and the leadership, they tend to be rational actors. But where does North Korea get the equipment, the technology it needs to build these weapons, it's from communist China. Does that mean the leadership in China controls Kim Jong-un? No, but it has a lot to say, because they rely on China to buy its exports, primarily coal, but others as well as getting imports from China of oil and the technologies, the equipment, the machinery they need to build this weapon. So ultimately, it is the Chinese that have the most leverage on North Korea. I think there's no doubt about that. So who should we be negotiating with? I don't think it's North Korea. We have tried diplomacy for years under Republican and Democratic administrations. We've cut deals that they subsequently break. Diplomacy hasn't worked. We can go to the UN and discuss this till we're blue in the face, but the Security Council, who has vetoes? China, Russia does. Are they going to let us do anything to North Korea? The answer is no. The only reason, remember the original Korean War, the reason we had a coalition of United Nations forces, primarily from the United States, but there were, I think upwards of a dozen countries that were also involved, but we were the principal ones to throw back the invasion by North Korea of South Korea, and subsequently, after the United States was threatening to be on the border of China, China invaded North Korea and South Korea, and we had a war on. Now, we've technically have not ended that war. We've had a truce, and that's what it is. We still station over 30,000 troops there. But if you look at the military options, there really aren't any. Conventional war simply doesn't make sense. For the simple reason, the North Koreans in the mountains near Seoul could literally wipe out Seoul, the capital of South Korea, and there are over 10 million people there. And if there were even a conventional war, I'm convinced millions of people would die, especially in Seoul, because the North Koreans have not only artillery in range, but also have rockets. It could devastate South Korea and severely damage, if not destroy, Seoul. So the conventional option simply is not feasible. And once you look into the details, that's the conclusion. There's no easy military option. As a matter of fact, it's one you simply rule out unless, and this is the underline here, clearly if North Korea, whether supported by China or not, were to invade South Korea, then we would respond, and so would the other nations. Now, would they? You got to keep in mind, the one thing I always look at is the populations. And you got to be careful with the numbers. You don't know how accurate they are. But roughly, North Korea has over 25 million people. South Korea has double that, over 50 million. And South Korea at one time was just as poor as North Korea, but they're the really the success story in terms of economic growth and development in Asia. Where do you get most of your flat screen televisions? I just happened to visit a store. I'm interested at some point when the price is right, getting a 65-inch 4K television. And a year ago, they were $1,200, $1,400, $1,500, depending on what company. And what I notice, Samsung is the leader in this. They tend to have good quality, but they're expensive. You pay for what you get. And I ran in another company that I haven't really checked out, TCL. And what really caught my eye was the price. It was a 55-inch. I really want 65. And there is a difference. But I could have bought it for $500 plus taxes and probably delivery as well. And it also has Roku built right in. And you really can't tell the difference. It's a good 4K system. Now, again, I don't know that much about the company. And the general advice, buy the cheapest when you're talking these flat screens. And 4K is significantly better than the existing models. And I'm really waiting. I think what you're really going to see the drop in prices across the board is when they go below the 55, 65, 75 inches and go down to the 30 to 40 inch range, 36 inch range. That's sort of the sweet spot. And that might happen this fall. I don't know. But why am I mentioning it? A lot of those flat screen televisions are produced in South Korea. Some in China, some in Japan. And that's just one item. We also get a lot of automobiles from South Korea, as well as Japan, although many of them are produced actually in the United States or Mexico. And the reason I bring this up, obviously, if there was a war, a conventional war, trade would severely be interrupted. And if it broke out and you don't have a television set, quickly go down to the store and buy it, because there would be a spike up in prices. You better believe it. People will take advantage of that. But there's a lot of trade between nations today. And who is really dependent on trade? It is China. Because if there were a major interruption of trade with China, what I'm suggesting could happen, I'm not saying it should or will, is if the United States and Europe got together and agreed that the only way to stop North Korea is to have a complete total embargo of all goods coming from North Korea. Well, that's meaningless. They don't export hardly any, and it's more than 80% of their exports go to China. China is very dependent on our trade to the United States, Canada, and the European Union. If that suddenly stopped, that puts a lot of leverage and pressure on the Chinese, especially the Chinese Communist Party. At some point, the regime in China is going to fall. Now, they have a lot of controls. It's very much a totalitarian regime, not as bad as North Korea, but still bad, even though there's more economic freedom. What would quickly happen? You would have a spike in unemployment, mass unemployment in China. That would be destabilizing to China. That's their greatest fear, because you have over a billion people. I forget the exact number. I know it's way over a billion people, and I should have checked that out. I want to say a billion five, but I got to check that out. But every month, every year, they have to get jobs for people entering the labor force. They have a big problem. And that's why they have had changes in their economic policy. At one time, they were a very poor nation, really a basket case, especially in the 50s and 60s, going into the 70s. They were very much an undeveloped country. It's largely in the last 20 years, going on 25 years, that has changed. And now they very much have a manufacturing base that at one time was in the United States, was in Europe, was in Canada, and a large portion of our industrial base is now in China. It's in other nations too, but it's primarily in China. And that provides jobs for hundreds of millions of people. Imagine not 10 or 20 or 30 million. In the United States today, we have somewhere between 20 and 30 million people that are unemployed. Now, that's not the official unemployment number. That's under 10 million, but that grossly understates it. It's definitely between 20 and 30 million. In other words, there are people, if they could find a good paying job, that would go back in the labor force. That's why I always emphasize the labor participation rate. Used to be at 66 to 67% in the United States. Now it's 63% and under. So you can't just look at the unemployment rate. You got to look at people that are not in the labor force that would come back if jobs were available. That's why I always caution people, don't look at that headline number. And presidents, especially under the Obama years, and the media that supports them, I call them big lie media, the television networks and your major newspapers, the few that are left in cities like New York, Washington, D.C., and Los Angeles, they got behind Obama and tried to minimize the problem. The problem in the United States today is a stagnating economy. We're growing at about 2%. We could easily grow over 3%. The historical average is about 3.5%. And with the right economic policies, you could get to 4 or 5% or more. And that means a new tax system, and it means prudence, financial responsibility, and getting government spending at all levels under control. The problem today in the United States is government spending is out of control for entitlements, for welfare programs, for defense, and the rest of the government. And then if you look at local and state levels, especially in some states that have been financially irresponsible, many of them are on the verge of bankruptcy. And a lot of people are going to be hurt because the pensions that they thought, the very generous pensions that they thought they were going to get because they work for the government, or they're not going to get. They're not going to get zero, but they're going to be getting a very lower amount. And you'll have states like Illinois, California, and others going hat in hand to Washington. And my answer to them is no, that's your problem. You were too generous with offering these pension plans. You see, the unions were in bed with the politicians. So they got the good retirement plans, good health insurance, and now the bills are coming due, and they can't pay them or can't pay what they're required to. I bring this up because imagine the same problem in China, and it is the same problem in the fact that you have people in agricultural areas, and that's most of the country. People are migrating from those agricultural lands into cities looking for employment. Now, for the last 25 years, the employment was there because most of the goods that they were producing, not all of them, but most of them, were for export to the United States as well as Europe, the developed nations. And that's why if you go to any retail store today, what do many of these goods say? Made in China. They also have other countries, made in Vietnam, made in Mexico. Now, I'm all for free trade. I need to say this. But I agree with Trump that we need fair trade. And what do I mean by fair trade? Many of these countries are violating their trade agreements. They're not competing fairly. You have both tariff barriers and non-tariff barriers. That's two ways. The third way is currency manipulation. And until fairly recently, China was a terrible currency manipulator. In other words, they manipulated their currency to make their export prices very, very low. They devalued the yuan, their currency. Now, recently they haven't. They've done the other way. So you have, where is the leverage? What leverage does the United States have to stop the nuclear proliferation that's happening in North Korea and in the Islamic Republic of Iran? The leverage has to be brought to bear with who? Forget the North Koreans, with China. Pressure has to be brought to bear. Now, you don't do this publicly. You do this privately, behind closed doors, but it has to be spelled out. Because like I said, the military option, whether it's conventional warfare or nuclear warfare, they're not viable options, because if you engaged, whether it's a conventional war or nuclear war, millions of people on both sides are going to get killed. And I don't think any president of the United States wants to be the one that initiates that. Now, if North Korea or China or both attack South Korea, then guess what? You're in war, and nuclear war will be, I think, unfortunately, happen. American people don't want that. The Chinese don't want that. I don't think the Russians want it. Japan, South Korea don't want it. It would be suicidal, and there would be tens of millions of people dying on both sides. So whether it's the conventional military options or nuclear options, they're not viable. You can threaten all you want, but when you're dealing with someone, a rogue nation, especially headed by this family that's headed it for, what, 70, 75 years, something like that, it's been in the family, it is the worst totalitarian regime on the planet, and that's saying something. And we have very little intelligence about it other than satellites. We don't have much, if any, human intelligence. You can't send someone, a graduate of our college, to North Korea. It would stick out. Now, obviously, you'd have to speak Korean and look Korean and really know the ways of the people, and it's very much controlled. So what has to take place? Clearly, the message has to go to China that the United States and Europe, and this has to be a united message. It's going to take time, folks. What I'm talking about usually takes, forget about 6 months, takes a year or two to develop it. And you're going to get resistance from Europe, whether it's Germany, France, or for that matter, even the United Kingdom, resistance from Canada, and resistance, unfortunately, in our own country. Now, why? We like all those cheap goods, no matter what nations they're from, whether it's kitchen utensils, dishware, cheap sneakers. I could go on and on. Most of them, not all of them, but a majority come from China and other nations. Vietnam is another one. Mexico is another. And we have large trade imbalances with those nations. So trade is the weak spot, the soft area of the Chinese. They're not going to take kindly to this, but they're playing a very dangerous game. They have more control over North Korea than they're letting on. The Chinese don't want a mass migration from where? North Korea into China. They need a wall or a fence to stop that. Because if you live in that regime, you want to flee it. You want to go. China is better than nothing staying in North Korea. And many, many people from North Korea fled into China as well as South Korea. Now, if you're caught, let's just say if you're not executed, you will be tortured and in prison for a very long time. And if you're familiar with their prison system, they put the entire family for three generations in prison if you do that. Like I said, it's a totalitarian regime. You don't want to live there. And frankly, you're a fool if you go there as a journalist or a tourist. That's not the answer. And if you look at a map, North Korea is close to Japan and South Korea, as well as other countries in the immediate vicinity, including Thailand, Vietnam, Cambodia, Burma, and don't forget about Taiwan. It's not far away. And it is in rocket range, or soon will be, of both Guam, Alaska, and most likely Hawaii as well. So this needs to be stopped. And it's time to take off the gloves and play hardball with the Chinese. You can get the American people nervous, and that's what they were trying to do. Oh, this is an ICBM. Well, yeah. How many do they have with nuclear weapons on it? I think that answer is zero. They're not there yet, but they have been developing these weapons for over 10, going on 20 years. It's a slow, deliberate process. They're not very rich to begin with. Many of the people have starved to death or starving. It's not a prosperous country, and it's not a country easy to deal with. They've played the United States for fools, whether it's Democrats or Republican presidents. They simply have reneged. They'll take our food aid, our aid, and then not fulfill their commitments and still develop the weapons in secret. Eventually, we find out, and it's not too hard when they start launching rockets. And they are trying to provoke us. But I always say, well, who's behind them? They're provoking us with the tacit approval of the Communist Chinese, the Communist Party in China. That's the case, and that's why the pressure has to be gradually but deliberately brought to bear. And if this is not resolved, I would say in a year, then at some point in the future, probably a year to two out, there needs to be a complete and total embargo of all goods and services exported by Communist China. That's the only way you're going to get their attention. And I think that plays with President Trump's concern not only about North Korea, but also about trade imbalances. The largest one is with Communist China. That will get their attention. Now, what do I recommend? The Communist Chinese need to replace the current regime. That means kill. I use the word replace, but that's a euphemism. You need to kill off the regime. And that's why the current leader is paranoid. He's changing his residence every couple of days because he's in fear of not only the Communist Chinese, but also the United States government sending a team or hiring a team to take him out. But it's more than just replacing him. Whoever takes his place needs to stop what they're doing. Because if we don't, other nations, including Japan, South Korea, and other nations in the Far East or in Asia are going to build nuclear weapons. Note that not only China, but India and Pakistan have nuclear weapons. We don't want, and really most of the other nations don't want to spend a lot of money on nuclear weapons. We want to not have nuclear proliferation where dozens of countries have nuclear weapons. That should be the objective. And unfortunately, we have a similar problem with the Islamic Republic of Iran. They're doing the same thing as North Korea, but they have the advantage of economic resources, primarily natural gas and oil. So they can pay North Korea and are paying them to develop the missile technology as well as the nuclear technology. And you have that technology transferred into Iran, helping their program. And they have developed the capability of getting the fuel that you need to have those bombs. And the agreement that President Obama signed should never have been signed. As far as I'm concerned, Iran already has nuclear weapons. They have not tested them. Very well may be closer than even North Korea. We don't know that. That's speculation on my part. But they, by selling their energy resources, oil and natural gas, that gives them the money to buy the technology to produce not only long-range missiles that can hit Europe, hit Israel, and they make no bones about it. They want to wipe out the Israelis. But who's next? Europe. So we don't want nuclear proliferation in the Middle East, because if it's clear, becomes clear that Iran has a nuclear capability, who's next? Saudi Arabia will have it. They already have the missiles, and they're not very accurate. They're old missiles that they bought from Pakistan. But when you put a nuclear weapon on it, and they have good relations with Pakistan, they'll get the nuclear weapons from Pakistan and put them on the missiles. They're not going to sit still for a nuclear armed with long-range missiles Iranian government. They hate each other already for religious and ethnic reasons. That goes back centuries. And periodically it breaks out in war. So for a lot of reasons, I agree this has to be stopped. But there's no point saber-rattling. I listen to a lot of talk radio because we're not equipped to take callers. We simply don't have the audience or the resources to do it. I wish we did. But when I listen to talk radio, you always get people that have limited knowledge, they're ignorant, and I'd be the first to say I'm ignorant on this. I'm not no expert, but at least I've looked at it, and it's clear to me that the military options are not, it's not something any president of the United States wants to order. Because once you go through the military briefings, and I think Donald Trump has, he's come to the same conclusion. It's not like he did in Syria firing a bunch of cruise missiles. That's going to have hardly any impact and could start a war. That's why you don't want to do it. But where are the facilities, nuclear and missile facilities in North Korea? Now, yes, we have spy satellites and photographs, but they're buried deeply in mountains. It's not going to be an easy target to take out. Oh, yeah, we have bunker busters, and we fired one recently in Afghanistan. So it's going to be difficult, and if you initiate this, it quickly can escalate into either an all-out conventional war at first, and then very well might be an all-out nuclear war. That's not in the interest of anybody. The United States certainly, our allies, as well as Russia and China. Now, the neocons are all hot to trot on this and are banging the drums and emphasizing this. I know, I listened to Republican radio early in the morning, and this was the story. I agree, it's important. But diplomacy has failed, and there's no real viable military option. So what's left? Scratch your head. Where does the problem really? Who can solve this? I'll say it's not the United States, it's not Japan, it's not South Korea, it's Communist China. So you must bring pressure on Communist China. And they're not going to like this, and they underdeliver too. But Trump prides himself in being a negotiator. Well, this is a tough negotiation, and you're going to have to be tough, and you're going to follow through. And let me caution you, Mr. President, it's not going to be popular at all to impose a embargo on Chinese goods, because the American consumer likes all those cheap, inexpensive goods that come from around the world, in particular, in this case, China. But that's what you have to communicate to the American people, the threat we truly face, and really the only option is to pressure, coerce, and that's what we'd be doing, Communist China to finally see the light, stop talking out of both sides of their mouths, and understand we don't want to do this, but we will. We take this issue seriously. We do not want a North Korea with intercontinental ballistic missiles. I don't think they're there yet. But they're not that far off, maybe a year or two. You learn by doing. That's how we develop the nuclear weapons and the missiles. And initially, there are a lot of failures. It takes a lot of time, a lot of money, a lot of persistence. But over time, you get better and better and better at it. You learn by doing. Practice, practice, practice. And that's what's happened in North Korea. Now, why are they doing this? You always have to ask that question, because a lot of people, well, why are they being so in your face about this? Well, they don't want the United States to invade North Korea. And they believe if they have nuclear weapons, like several other nations, that we wouldn't do it. If a nation doesn't have nuclear weapons, the United States is intervening country after country after country. That's why North Korea is doing it, and that's exactly what Iran is doing. So once they develop a viable, real nuclear threat that can take out cities in Europe as well as the Middle East, would you start a war with Iran? I don't think so. Would you start a war with North Korea? The time is now to act. Now, you shouldn't rush it. You got to be very deliberate about it and evaluate the options and gradually increase the pressure. But the only real alternative I have come up with is you got to bring pressure on China. China is the only one that really can stop what North Korea is doing. And that means regime change. And remember, whoever they change them with doesn't mean they're going to be any better. There's a lot of uncertainty here. The key is they totally stop their missile development as well as nuclear manufacturing nuclear bombs. And that requires inspections. We can't take the word of the Communist Chinese or the North Koreans. In other words, we bring the pressure, but we got to make sure, as Ronald Reagan said, trust but verify. And the sooner we do it, the better. Now, I don't mean we have to do it tomorrow or next week or even 6 months, but this shouldn't take too long. In my mind, a year is sufficient to plan, organize, and prepare for negotiations, and probably another 6 months to a year to bring pressure on the Communist Chinese. That's the only thing in my mind that'll work. And I have an open mind on this, and it's not an easy problem. And what you got to understand is why it might be, and I've heard people call out, why don't we just launch a nuclear weapon and take out the regime? Well, what's next? You got to think of the consequences, the second, third, fourth order consequences. If we did that, do you want Dallas to be blown up by a nuclear weapon? I'm in Dallas. I don't. And it won't be coming from North Korea. It will be coming from the Communist China. And oh yes, we have submarines that will take out cities in Communist China, and the Chinese know it. Our submarines from far distances can launch missiles that are highly accurate and have nuclear weapons on them. But once you do that, we're at nuclear war. And then we're talking tens, if not hundreds of millions of people dying. Nobody wants that. No one that's rational wants that. This is not an easy foreign policy question. It has been put off and put off by Republicans and Democratic presidents. Mistakes were made. You can finger point all day. A lot of people like to blame Clinton and his Secretary of State. Oh, there are a lot of people to blame. And now we're reaching the point where we can't kick the can down the road, because this can kill a lot of people. So yes, you're going to hear news stories about the missile that North Korea launched. Happy 4th of July Independence Day. But our diplomats, as well as our military, need to get their act together. I'm sure the military plans over the years have been refined. But the military knows the risk. The Secretary of Defense certainly knows the risk. I don't think the military options at all are the answer. Now, initially, I thought, well, usually when that's the case, we use the CIA, covert operations, primarily to take out the regime. But that's not that doable either. And again, I say, you don't know who's going to replace him. He might be a lot worse. You're not dealing with a very rational actor, but he is rational. He uses this to provoke the United States because he wants something. You always have to ask. Well, what's the ask? What do you want? I've been recently viewing, I don't have a television at home, but I do have, recently I bought a CD player. And I asked around and people said, well, a very popular series, even my librarian says this, is House of Cards. And I've been watching that. You have to ask your opponents, your rivals, what do they want? And we tell them what we want. Now, they've already rejected what we want. We want North Korea to stop missile development and nuclear weapons development. They said, no, we're not doing it. The reason we have that program is so you will not intervene in our country. And once we have nuclear weapons, that's probably true. So it's time to play hardball, elevate this, and put tremendous pressure on the Communist Chinese. Now, what they and you need to understand, they know that if the United States shut down, and I mean completely shut down, exports to the developed nations. Not completely. They'll still sell something. What happens? you're going to have riots, rebellion in communist China. See, I'm fully convinced that the Communist Party in China has a limited amount of time before they are overthrown. I don't know what's going to overthrow them, because as people become more prosperous, they want more. They need more. Well, not need. They want more is the better way to say it. And they don't like the fact that, oh, they produce all these goods, and most of them, not all of them, but most of them go where? Abroad. They want a rising standard of living. And if the Communist Party can't deliver that, their days are numbered. And so the Communist Party that rules this nation, they know this is a ticking time bomb, especially when you have such a large population. Now, they try to control it. They're all about power and control, and they do control their people. And they make sure any dissent is quickly and severely suppressed. They're just as bad as North Korea. The difference is, though, they've learned that to be a world power, you need to have an economic base to develop your nations. And they've been very, very successful at it. And who's paid the price? The American people, as well as other nations. Because many of the jobs and goods that used to be produced in the United States are now produced in China, as well as Korea, South Korea, and Japan. I'm old enough to remember that we used to manufacture televisions in the United States. We used to dominate consumer electronics. Not anymore. And look at the car industry. One of the consequences of globalism is what? Competition. I'm all for competition and free trade, as long as that free trade is fair. Now, the second story, I'm looking at the clock. I only have a limited amount of time. And my reaction to this was, gee, Bill Gates got a clue. You know, the brilliant, richest guy. You know, I don't argue with success. I'm a great admirer of Bill Gates. I want to say that up front. He's a competitor. But in terms of politics, he's one of these one world government people, thinks that the answer to the problems of the world is a world government. Well, the United Nations is probably the closest to that. And before that, the League of Nations, they're both failures. And the reason they're failures is most of the so-called nations are led by dictators, tyrants, monarchs. Some are authoritarian, many are totalitarian. That's a club or organization I don't want to be a member of. Now, yes, today, in New York City, the Security Council, the United Nations is meeting to discuss this. The record of the United Nations, it's a corrupt, failed organization. If you are a regular listener to this show, I agree with the slogan, the United Nations out of the United States and the United States out of the United Nations. Now, that was very popular with the John Birch Society. I'm not a member or ever have been a member of the John Birch Society, but I agree with that. We're the biggest funder of the United Nations. I think we keep it in business because that we can spy in New York City. We can spy on these nations. And I can see the point. But the answer is not a one world government. It's not socialism, communism, or a welfare state. Socialism inevitably fails. And what Bill Gates came out for, and he's always been for open borders, he wants cheap, compliant labor. What's in it for the donor-owner class? And Bill Gates is a chartered member, one of the, I think, the richest people, although that his ranking does change a little. And I'm sure he gives probably to both political parties. I don't know, but he's very much a liberal, if not progressive, a one-world government person. And I believe in being idealistic, but you have to look at the reality. Now, I want to play something. Why would Bill Gates change his mind? And he dramatically changed his mind. He was for immigration, open borders, not only for the United States, but also for Europe. For the United States, it's primarily so it can get cheap, compliant labor. I'm not surprised with that position, but that's really what's behind it. And to the extent that they're successful, anywhere from 30 to 60 million illegal aliens that are in the United States would be given citizenship. I don't favor that. I'm a strong supporter of the American people, and it's the American people that have suffered the most. Now, what is Bill Gates really afraid of? Because this is very much a 180, and he gave an interview with a German paper. And the fact that Europe has to change its immigration policy because they're being overwhelmed with millions of refugees from Africa, but also from the Middle East. And he's suggesting one way to stop it is first, not encourage it. I agree. But second, and this is doesn't surprise me, send more foreign aid to Africa. Well, Africa is very much the whole continent. That's where you really have the poverty. And I applaud his efforts in charity. But the answer is not mass migration. And I think he's finally understood that. People have to bloom where they're planted. The answer is not to have tens of millions or more people go from wherever they're living today into other nations, whether it's the United States, Germany, Sweden, France, United Kingdom. That's not the answer. It's been tried and it's failing. Ideas have consequences. Now, what is Bill Gates really afraid of? Let me play a video clip and let's see what his answer is.
Why don't you describe for me as vividly as you can what it is you're worried about, what it is that the nightmare scenario looks like?
Fortunately, there's very few things, and most of them are very low probability. Some big volcanic explosion, gigantic earthquake, asteroid. Well, at least in the nuclear case, you've got to say we take it quite seriously. We budget a lot of money, have a lot of people who think about nuclear deterrence, and I'm very glad that work's being done, and I rate the chance of a nuclear war in my lifetime as being fairly low. I rate the chance of a widespread epidemic far worse than Ebola in my lifetime as well, over 50%. If we look at the 20th century and we look at the death chart of the 20th century, I think everybody would say, oh yeah, there must be a spike for World War I. You know, sure enough, there it is, like 25 million. And there must be a big spike for World War II, and there it is, it's like 65 million. But then you'll see this other spike that is as large as World War II right after World War I. And most people, a lot of people would say, well, what? What was that? There's two kinds of flus. There's flus that spread between humans very effectively, and there's flus that kill lots of people. And those two properties have only been combined into a widespread flu once in history. Well, that is Spanish flu. We have no idea where it came from. It's called the Spanish flu because the Spanish press was the freest. They were the first to talk openly about it. And so in the annals of epidemic history, that's the big event. I funded a disease modeling group that uses computer simulation, and that work has been phenomenal in helping us target our polio eradication resources and, you know, which parts of Nigeria should we work harder on. And it's very natural, if you have a group like that, to say, hey, look at something like a Spanish flu in the modern day. Health systems are far better. And so you think, hey, that wouldn't be very bad. Well, we tried it, and there are some assumptions we had to make. But what we showed is that the force of infection because of modern transport, which compared to 1918 is over 50 times as great. And so if you get something like a flu, and you look at that map of how within days, it's basically in all urban centers of the entire globe, that is very eye-opening. That didn't happen with Spanish flu in the past. The opportunity to do more than just let it run its course is really only in the last decade. Basically, when you talk about drugs, you can talk about small molecules or talk about these complex biological protein-like things, of which there's a subclass called antibodies. Antibodies are the molecules that the immune system naturally builds to attack disease. Today, the idea that somebody says, oh, here's an antibody, make a lot of it, make it very quickly, that's right on the cutting edge. And the Ebola epidemic showed me that we're not ready for a serious epidemic, an epidemic that would be more infectious and would spread faster than Ebola did. This is the greatest risk of a huge tragedy. This is the most likely thing by far to kill over 10 million excess people in a year. We don't need to invest nearly what we do in military preparedness. This is something where less than $1 billion a year on R&D, medical surveillance, standby personnel, cross-training the military so they can play a role in terms of all the logistics here. This can be done, and we may not get many more warnings like this one to to say, okay, it's a pretty modest investment to avoid something that really, in terms of the human condition, would be a gigantic setback.
Now, I urge you to look at the video, and before I forget, the way you listen to the Pronk Pop Show is to go to my companion blog for the show, and that's pronkpops.wordpress.com, pronkpops, pronkpops.wordpress.com. And under my photograph, you'll have links to the most recent 60 to 80 shows, but below that, you'll have some of the information, videos, cartoons, photograph, articles that I've read that help me prepared for the show. So I'm giving you a lot of additional information. I always urge you to have an open mind, do your own homework. I don't expect to agree or disagree with me or Bill Gates. Now, I happen to agree with Bill Gates here, and not because he's Bill Gates. I've spent a lot of time also looking at the question, you know, what's the most dangerous thing that could happen? And he went through the list. And yes, I came to the same conclusion. It's viruses spreading that could kill. And not too long ago, a couple of years ago, we had Ebola in Dallas. And I knew what it was, and I wasn't freaking out. I said, well, if this starts to spread, I'm out of here. I'm not staying. I'm gone. But a lot of people would come to that same conclusion. I would come to the conclusion faster. Now, I wasn't freaked out, but I knew that if that started to spread and they didn't contain it, and Dallas was totally unprepared. We're better prepared now, but why don't they spend money on it? It's a rare event. It's only when it happens that people panic and try to deal with it. And fortunately, we were lucky. And eventually, Africa, it came out of Africa. They got control over it there, and it's not easy to do. And it's deadly. Most people that get it die. They bleed out. Just got the signal, I got to wrap it up. So I'm not surprised he's concerned with millions of people coming out of Africa trying to get in Europe, because that will spread disease. And a lot of those diseases, viruses, come out of Africa. They're all over the world, though. I'm not trying to pick on Africa. And they're dangerous. They're killers. And there's little or nothing that they can do. Once you got it, your chances are not good. And even with heroic efforts, people do die. And we simply don't have the money or resources. When you're talking not a few cases, but tens of thousands, it will spread rapidly and kill millions of people. So I think that's one of the things he's thinking about, that maybe open borders on second thought is not a very good idea. Now, thank you for listening. And now, America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. With a voice of Richland College. You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by pronkpops.wordpress.com. and KDUX Web Radio.wordpress.com.